Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of November, and this is Game On. Coming up today, we'll have live updates as Manchester United are in Champions League action in Villarreal.
You made four changes tonight. I suppose the headline news is Bruno Fernandes drops to the bench, Danny van der Beek comes in.
Yeah, of course. Both fantastic players. That's the beauty of having a good squad. As you say, I've only been here in this for 48 hours, but there's decisions to be made. There's a team to be picked, and I was spoiled for choice with the options I had. Simple as that, really. You know what?
Pity's not a bit more spoiled across the back. Mark Langdon will tell us why Mauricio Pochettino even is the frontrunner to take over at Man U. And meanwhile in racing, trainer Henny de Bromhead will discuss his strong start to the season and what to expect as he tries to conquer both Newbury and Ferryhouse this weekend.
Honeysuckle and Rachel Blackmore clear from Sharjah Epitome behind those. It's a beautiful straight 11 victories for Honeysuckle. She is the winner of the Unibet Champion Hurdle.
Paul Carr reacts as Waterford FC part ways with another manager ahead of their Premier Division survival playoff, and we'll start our build-up to the FAI Cup final. So if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
See, this gig would be a lot easier, Marie, if I just read the script rather than reacting to what people were saying and then losing what I was reading as well.
Just, well, you're only 2 and a half years. Someday I might learn. Maybe you will.
Someday I might learn that Paul Michael Carrick. Decisions to be made. What about across the back, Paul Carey? I mean, Paul Carey, can you not do anything about, like, the Titanic had turned quicker than that Harry Maguire?
I thought you were going to say Andrea Bocelli at one point was linked with the Man U job.
You probably better. He actually might take it.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's not an awful lot you can do tactically with that team, Ruby, I guess, and the quick turnaround that Carrick's had, and maybe he's just looking for a bit more effort. I mean, he's gone for a bit more protection with Van den Beek instead of Bruno Fernandes, and it looks as if the way they've set up, and in particular in the first 12 minutes, Man U are sitting in here tonight and are going to try hit Villarreal on a counter attack with the pace of Sancho and Martial. But I mean, would you throw Eric Bailly in there, Dallo? I'm not overly sure they'd make too much of a difference. So I mean, the way they've set up, they're certainly deeper, and so, you know, a clean sheet and preventing those goals from leaking is certainly seems high up on priorities for Carrick at this moment in time.
High in the priorities, but how achievable is it? I mean, I know, look, I'm only a fan looking in, but they're so poor across the back.
Yeah, they are, and they have been for the last number of weeks. I guess the hope that a Manchester United fan will have is when you look at maybe somebody like Chelsea of last year with Lampard, they were suffering, maybe not to the same extent, but they had the same sort of problems of leaking goals, and he got in there and he got structure around that team, and they're probably the most organised and best defensive team in the league at the moment. So you would hope in time that somebody else can bring better organisation to that back four, and I do believe you can do that. I think you can put structures around the back four and the two that can protect from a midfield point of view to I guess shore up the defence and stop those goals from leaking. But at this moment in time, and given that he's only out of the job 48 hours, there's probably not a hell of a lot that Carrick can do other than ask for a bit more effort. I mean, a bit more effort, that's, you know, being polite about it. They need a hell of a lot more effort, particularly from Maguire and Lindelof. But I think the way they've set up will help them tonight. They'll be happy for Villarreal to have the ball. They'll sit deep. They won't give much space or leave many gaps in behind, and that might help a small bit. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Villarreal would still score tonight.
Should he be in the job though, Paul? Like, that is the big question. Paul Scholes was on BT beforehand, and he said that Carrick, McKenna, and Phelan shouldn't be in the club at all. Let's hear what he had to say.
I'd be almost embarrassed being on the staff now, after what happened to Ollie. Being on the staff, preparing the team for this game tonight, I think they all should have gone, whether it was sacked or they go off their own back, because they were part of Ollie's team. Ollie trusted them each week to prepare a team for games, and they've let the club down, they've let the players down, just as much as Ollie has.
Paul Scholes makes a good point there, doesn't he, Paul?
Yeah, it's a bit weird. I find it weird anyway, Marie, that they're still there. You know, the problem didn't just rest with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Like, Carrick and co would have been heavily involved in the organisation and the training of that side. So I find it weird that they're still there. I think the problem probably persists higher up the food chain in regards to that they didn't have anybody lined up. And listen, there's been enough said about that. There should have been somebody lined up. It was evident before the international break that things weren't right. And that's probably what should have happened. But I think for for Carrick to hang around? Like, is he hoping that he gets a little bit of a nibble at it and hopefully lands the job until the end of the season, until somebody else comes in? Maybe. But I think if you're loyal to the people that you worked with, and you take your responsibility for what wasn't right, I think they all probably should have gone, and Scholes has probably hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, and in fairness to him, he actually does have the right to say it, because he was one of the people who was quite critical of Ole for the last few months, in fairness to him. So we're going to be dealing with people linked to the job from now until the job is filled, and we're even dealing with people being linked to the interim job. Ernesto Valverde is the latest to be linked to that, but interestingly as well, Pochettino was asked today about it in his PSG press conference. He gave the whole line, "I'm happy where I am now, and that is a fact," which, reading between the lines, doesn't really say that he's committed to PSG.
Yeah, there's problems there with Leonardo, who's the director of football, and the people that he brings into the club. It doesn't seem that Pochettino has that, I guess, hands-on approach when it comes to the signing of players, or who they bring in to the building in order to build a squad around. So that relationship seems to be fractured. It might be a Brazilian-Argentinian thing as well too, I'm not too sure. But I can't understand, Marie, why Pochettino would want that job. And I know Ruby and other Man U fans would probably say, they're the biggest club in the country. But there's so much turmoil there. And those players, yes, there's a decent core group of players that you can build a side around, but the players have shown, and it's not just with Ole but with previous managers gone by, that when things aren't going well, you know, they down tools and they get managers sacked. And is Pochettino going to go in there and take that risk with that Manchester United squad when he's got a pretty cushy job, you know, winning the French League, you would imagine, this season, and going forward and having a right go with a Champions League? I just can't understand why he'd want that job. I can't see anybody other than managers who are actually out of work, or somebody coming from the likes of an Ajax, being enticed in there. I think any of the big managers who are involved with big clubs at this moment in time, Manchester United is a slippery one, is the way I see it.
Right, Paul, as a fan, fully agree with you. It's a poison chalice, and why would you want to drink from it as I see it right now? So if I was Poch, I'd be staying where I was as well.
Absolutely. I mean, like, he's got an unbelievable group of players there at Paris Saint-Germain. Yes, they might be difficult to manage, but he has a right opportunity. You know, people will always question Pochettino about his ability to win trophies, that he went to Tottenham, and yes, he did an amazing job, fell short in the Premier League, fell short in the Champions League final, probably hasn't got that on his CV of winning major trophies. He's almost guaranteed to do that at Paris Saint-Germain, and then he's got a really good chance of landing the Champions League, which is what all players and all managers across Europe would want. So for me, I don't see him wanting it. I think he'd be an excellent fit, because I think he's a superb manager, and I think what he did at Tottenham, if he is able to do that at Manchester United, would be a superb job. I just don't see him wanting it. I personally think that somebody like Brendan Rodgers, I know he was involved with Liverpool, but I think the job when he went back to Celtic and then to Leicester, I think he deserves a shot at, I was about to call them a top four, but we'll call them a top 16 for the moment.
Just say a big club.
Yeah, I think he deserves a shot, and I think what he's done with the limited resources has probably gone under the radar of many people, and I think he deserves a shot at a top club, and I think he could do a superb job for Manchester United.
I really like Brendan Rodgers, but I just can't get over that documentary he made when he was Liverpool manager. I just can't take him seriously ever since then. Okay, we will be getting into the rest of the football news a little bit later on, but now we're going to turn our attention to horse racing, and there was a little bit of news earlier on today. The Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board announced that the hair and blood samples taken from horses at premises near Monasterevin earlier this month have tested negative for prohibited substances. We covered this story at the time with you, Ruby. So for anyone that wasn't aware, animal remedies were seized at an address in Kildare on November 9th in a raid that was led by officials from the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, and supported by Gardaí as well as IHRB staff. At the time, it was said it was a department-led operation as part of an ongoing investigation into equine doping, and no further comment has been made by the IHRB. Ruby, we covered it at the time, and one of the reasons that we covered it so deeply was because your dad was one of the trainers who was caught up in the raid, and you made the point that we'll see what happens afterwards when the test samples do come back, and now we have those results.
Yeah, look, the test samples have come back, and they've all come back negative, which I fully expected, Marie. Look, that's for what the IHRB always tests for. It's for all time substances, and they the tests are carried out at LGC Laboratories in Newmarket, and they're tested to, I don't know, thousandth or hundreds of thousands or whatever it is. But look, they've all come back negative. I didn't really expect anything different. But look, what was found in John Warwick's car on the time, that's a Department of Agriculture investigation. So that will take some time to come to light just yet. But I expected that news. I was hoping it. It's a good news story. But unfortunately for horse racing right now, the bad news seems to be outweighing the good news.
Henry de Prama, trainer, is with us on the line as well. And Henry, unfortunately, a lot of what me and Ruby have been talking about over the last year or so has been negative. There have been a series of controversies, and it does feel like there's reputational damage to horse racing because of that. How are you feeling about your sport at the moment?
It's very frustrating, to be honest. You know, I don't think anyone in Irish racing would be surprised by that, those results today. You know, like I say, very frustrating, basically. It's so well governed, in my opinion. You know, the testing is incredible, really. Sometime, you know, we're world leaders in this. I think sometime we have to accept we're very good at what we do, and try and move forward from it, you know.
I've been the same boat as you, Henry. I know exactly how much testing goes on, and I don't know how much proof you have to find, but look, we're both inside the tent, so people will always say that's going to be your opinion. But anyway, we will move on.
One thing I'd add to that is, if people have information, I think they have to come forward with it. You know, I think it's wrong that you can make, you know, these comments and then not back them up. Like, if I knew someone had done something wrong in any of us, you know, like, you know, obviously tell the authorities or whoever governs that, and they investigate it further, you know. So I think that should definitely be done as well.
So do I. Bring the proof, show us, help us, and we'll root out the wrong ones.
Absolutely. But none of us want that happening in our industry, and obviously. And, that goes without saying. So, yeah, help find the people who are doing it, and get it sorted, you know, if that is the case.
Exactly. Henry, on a more positive light and looking at Henry de Bromhead, last weekend was a big weekend for you, and a Plutar in Haydock, big crowd, atmosphere, big day, and boy, did he deliver.
Yeah, he certainly did. Yeah, the pair of them. Yeah, it was brilliant. Sure, it was just it was just great results. Rachel was brilliant on him. He jumped great, and he's still only 7. Obviously, his run in the Gold Cup was savage. If Indo hadn't been there, he'd have been a very impressive winner, beating a very good Jewel Cup winner, Gold Cup winner. Yeah, it was great. It was great. Brilliant for Cheveley Park. They were there, and just one of those good days.
Were you expecting him to be as impressive as he was?
You've obviously forgotten who you're talking to. I never expect anything. It was a pretty stomach-churning morning. We had Bob in his beginner's chase in Gorin, and then APT in that race. So, no, I certainly wasn't. Just if he could go and get the job done in any way, I would have been very happy. But the way he did it was incredible. Possibly complimented, I would say, you know, the performance by horses that I'd say that the three behind him would have preferred more of an ease in the ground. But I don't want to take anything away from him. He was brilliant on the day.
No, you couldn't take anything away from him. But when you're going there with him, having gone to Down Royal 3 weeks ago at Manila Indo, he gets turned over by Frodon. Does that make you a bit more apprehensive? Have you up the ante with a Plutard at home since then? What way did you leave Down Royal and approach Haydock?
Yeah, you know, two different types. Indo is just, Indo, he's so laid back. I mean, I was giving him a slap on the chest there when we were saddling him, going, come on, buddy, we need to sort of, you know, we're at the races here now, we need to warm up, you know, and he's just like that. He's so laid back. He's a tough fella to get ready first time out. I have to say, I thought I had him more forward than I did. And then at Plutarch, yeah, you know, he was in a similar time, so we have to get a bit more work into him. We probably increased it a little bit more after Down Royal. And, it was of course, you'd question yourself going there fitness-wise, but we felt we had him a bit more down the road. And like I say, two different types.
You started with Bob Olinger as well last Saturday. He went to Money's Beginners. You mentioned maybe he might go to Limerick at Christmas. I think you were kind of speaking on the hoof. You hadn't made plans when you were asked. But were you impressed with him? Were you happy with how he did it in Goran Park?
Yeah, it was. Like, it was a very good race, you know. Like, you know, Bacardi's, like, he's 150 horse. Jesse's horse, Ashdale Bob, he was second in a grade one last year, won a grade two at Navan. You know, it's... I think the way the weather is at the moment, a lot of people, usually you'd have more beginners, obviously, to thin them out a bit. And everyone went there for the soft ground, or a lot of, you know, anyone who had their horses ready went for the soft ground. So I thought it was a very competitive race on paper. I was surprised he was as short as he was in the betting. And I thought he jumped really well, I have to say. He pecked on landing at the third last, probably jumped it a bit too well, and I thought they had really quickened up, which I think that can be quite a trappy fence. You'd know more about that than me, but running down the hill to the third last, they looked to inject a lot of pace into it, and he sort of winged it and just pecked on landing. I thought he jumped the second last fine, and I think at that stage, Darry just wanted to get him home, you know, and fair play to Darry, gave him a great ride. And I'm delighted.
It's always great to start with a clear round, but the wheels are really spinning now, Henry. Obviously, big weekend coming up. You're going to Newbury for the Ladbroke Trophy with Eclat de Rire. He looked slightly unlucky at Cheltenham. The ball bounced for you pretty much all week, but it didn't bounce for him, and he's a live runner.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fairness, his owner, Peter, is based over there, and... he suggested it in the spring, so we said we'd have a look at it and aim towards it. And yeah, he was good in Wexford. Hopefully he'll come on for the run, and he's in good form. Ideally would love a little bit more rain, but they're saying the ground is lovely there, so looking forward to it.
Look, you pitched him into the RSA last year, so you obviously think he has the potential to be a grade one horse. Do you think he is?
I don't know. You know, when you get to those 150 horses, like he's a very good horse, whether he's a grade one horse or not. You know, I think it's just another step, and kind of hard to tell that at home. He's lightly raced. He's only, you know, he won his point to point. He won a maiden hurdle, then COVID, and we got shut down, and he was very good over fences last year. Like you say, just a bit unfortunate in the RSA. Whether he is or not, I don't know, but we'll treat him that way until he proves us right, you know, proves that he's not.
Well, to be fair, like, if anyone has horses to judge him off, it's quite possibly you right now. You do have a Plutar, a Manila Indo, the two best chasers in the land, like, so if anyone can look at horses passing the boy in the gallop every morning and think, maybe it could be him, it kind of is you at the moment.
I think if I was trying to find out if three-mile chasers were grade one horses at home, I wouldn't have too many left, because I find, and I know you do as well, I'm sure that was a tongue-in-cheek question, but you know, like, you only really see it on the track, or I do. I wouldn't be too hard on them at home. We try and keep it for the track and see, but he's a lovely horse, he jumps well, and we're looking forward to Saturday. We'll see how it goes.
Ruby is being very nice to you, Henry. Are you surprised by that?
Well, you know, I think it was the threat of my mother last year. when the last time we spoke on air, you know, he's obviously a bit nervous there, and he's just taking it easy on me. Thanks.
No, I'm only teeing you up for Honeysuckle. I mean, 12 runs, 12 wins, unbeaten in her career, faces a much stiffer challenge in the Hatton's Grace this year, maybe than she did last year. Manila Indo beaten first time up, Calixius beaten, tell me something girl, put the kettle on. How's Honeysuckle?
Honeysuckle's good, she's in great form, she worked really well the other day, and we're happy. It's the first run of the season for her, so we'll see, but she's really good, and we're really happy with her. Yeah,
I know you're happy with her and you're thrilled to have her, but do you feel any extra pressure with her, even over the Gold Cup horses, with what she's done, what she's achieved? She's an unbeaten record and people are starting to latch on to that, Honeysuckle and Rachel Blackmore. Do you feel any more pressure with her than maybe you do with some of the others?
You would, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd put myself under pressure with all of them, to be honest, but yeah, especially with the unbeaten record, that's, you know, you'd love to try and keep that going, obviously, but look, we'll see. It's her. I don't think you can sort of it's a long season ahead as well, so you kind of, as much as you'd like to, if someone's more revved than you are on the day, like, we have a big season ahead of us, so of course we'd love to do it. We've done what we can. Do I get under pressure with her? Of course I do. Yeah, absolutely. The stomach is churning already in anticipation of Sunday, but, you know, that's it. That's all part of it.
And the weekends keep rolling for you, Henry. The following weekend, you'll probably have Envoy Allen in the John Durkin. It is a pretty surreal time for you. Every weekend, big race after big race, you're trotting out the big horses.
Yeah, it really is. You know, when you first start training, you dream of training a winner. Winning the races we're winning now, it's ridiculous, really, to be honest. It's an incredible position to be in. But as I say, it can't be done without the team we have with us, working with us, and also the clients we have supporting us. You know, they give us these amazing horses and give us the opportunity to train them. That's obviously a massive part of it all.
You're making the most of it. Before we let you go, any plans of where you might go at Manila Times, your Grand National winner, when might we see him?
He's in the Durkin. I think it's a listed race at, I haven't really firmed up anything yet. There's a listed race at Aintree.
The Manny Cloud says it.
Yeah, maybe. I was just looking at that, but I haven't really firmed up anything yet, so I wouldn't like to say for sure. But he's in mighty form and looking forward to getting him started again.
Oh, well, sure, a bit lucky. Well, there's a hurdle race in Clonmel that he qualifies for next Thursday too, if you want to fancy that. But anyway, Henry, best of luck this weekend. Thanks so many for taking our call. We're going to take a quick break.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. So, Munster Rugby have confirmed that their senior coach, Stephen Larkin, will leave the province at the end of the current season after declining a contract extension offer. They have just released that statement. They said that they did offer him a contract extension beyond next summer, but he declined the offer. He said that it was because of personal reasons and he wants to return to Australia with his family and to return to coaching there. He had been linked in the last few months with the return to the Brummies, so it is not unexpected, this announcement. Munster will be looking for a new attack specialist, though, and there will be plenty of people, no doubt, lining up for that role. But the 42 are reporting that they understand that former Ireland under-20s coach Noel McNamara could take the role or is under consideration for the role. He'd only just joined the Sharks in South Africa, but he does have a very good record and pedigree and is definitely very well thought of in coaching circles. And he's also a Clare man. Now, let's turn our attention back to football. Paul Carey is in studio watching Manchester United and Villarreal. First game under Michael Carrick. Are we seeing a revolution, Paul?
Not really, Marie. You know, 37 minutes gone. It's nil all. Villarreal have had the majority of the possession of Man U, like I mentioned in the first couple of minutes. Happy enough to sit back in and just protect what they have. A draw tonight would probably be enough for them, given that they have young boys in the final game. But not really much to report on. There was one or two half chances. Villarreal looked threatening down that right hand side, and Telles just is not very good, to put it mildly, in 1v1 situations. So he looks as if he can be a little bit exposed. But the last 5 minutes, Sancho started to come into the game a bit more. Martial has started to come into the game, but not offering a huge amount going forward at this moment in time. And like I mentioned, just seemed very content to sit in and try protect what they have, but not much to report on.
What about their attitude? Like, are they, do they look like they want it a little bit more? Are they playing with a little bit more desire?
I mean,
no,
it's yeah, it's hard to tell after that first
honesty,
30 minutes.
Honesty. Be honest, there's no way they are.
Not really. I think it's the characters that they have, or the lack of characters they have in that squad is probably evident. And at times like this, when the chips are down, they don't seem to have any real leaders to call upon. Like, I know people have been crying out, is probably an exaggeration, to put Donny van de Beek in, but what I've seen of Donny van de Beek when he's been at Manchester United, he doesn't look near good enough to play in that team and in that system. I think it's a completely different way of playing, so I don't think he offers anything more than what was already there, maybe a bit more effort. But the attitude of those players has to be questioned over the last, you know, couple of years, not even just this season, over the last couple of years. Their record in Champions League has been terrible. I think in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they played 14 and they lost 7. So nothing to suggest that anything's going to change. But over the first 40 minutes, if you ask me, is there a significant difference in application? It looks very much like the same team and the same sort of sides that we've seen over the last couple of weeks.
Not surprising, really. Mark Langding of the Racing Post is with us now. Mark, at the top of the show, we were discussing possible candidates for interim manager and possible candidates for manager. You always have your finger on the pulse. We were speaking as well about Pochettino talking to the press at his PSG press conference and gave the usual "I'm happy right now" answer. So do you think that he would be the one to take over at Manchester United?
I feel like he should be the one, and I feel like he probably is Manchester United's first choice. There's been sort of rumours in France that, you know, Paris Saint-Germain are already looking to sound out Zinedine Zidane to see whether he would potentially take that job in Paris, which would then allow Pochettino, to move to Manchester immediately. I don't like the idea of United going for an interim manager. You know, we're only in November. To just bring somebody in for the rest of the season just doesn't feel like a right fit. So I think that United should be pushing for Pochettino now. He's got a very uneasy relationship, I think it's fair to say, with the sporting director, Leonardo. I don't buy too much the stuff about him being upset in France and, you know, being too far away from his family. It's probably about the same train ride to London to Paris as what it is London to Manchester. So I think it's more to do with the relationship with Leonardo. There's been a lot of things going on behind the scenes at Paris, even, you know, just in terms of administration, with people not being happy with Leonardo and the way that he completely runs the club, said to be quite a difficult guy to get on with. And so I think Pochettino is looking for a way out. I think it was true that he was thinking about returning to Tottenham in the summer, and I would suggest that Manchester United would be even more appealing to him. He won't be cheap because there's a buyout clause, but realistically, for Manchester United, around €10 million isn't that expensive, given the money that they've wasted, on various talent over the last sort of 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, they've wasted plenty of money, but I feel like I'm already tired of talking about Manchester United, and I'm a fan, so we'll move on. Chelsea are in action tonight. Thomas Tuchel is doing a wonderful job with them, and they only need a draw to get through.
Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, a good example, Chelsea and Thomas Tuchel, what he's done, with Chelsea, to kind of what Manchester United maybe had with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Chelsea had that with Frank Lampard, got somebody in of a better quality, and you immediately saw an upturn in fortunes. They've been fantastic defensively, ever since really Tuchel arrived, working with the same players. Yes, they've had money to spend, but he's done so further forward. feels like, you know, this is a game where you know, we're at the really busy period now, the start of a very busy period for the Premier League team. So I would have thought Chelsea would be, you know, get the win here, and Juventus are not playing particularly well, and then you can forget about the Champions League until February and concentrate on sort of, you know, maintaining their lofty Premier League position. But Juve are, you know, a famous old name in European football, just haven't been playing well for a while. They managed to win the reverse game against Chelsea. It was a really dogged and defensive display, and then they looked a hit on the counter-attack. But a team that's really struggling for identity, I think, under the returning Max Allegri at the moment.
Paul, you're a big Chelsea fan, as we know, and as Mark said there, they're going really well defensively, but maybe up top they probably do need to be hitting the target a little bit more. But the news that Romelu Lukaku might be playing tonight, we're still not 100% sure, would definitely be welcome news.
100% Marie, I was over at the Burnley game before the international break, and they had so many chances, and it was like last season all over again, where they were coughing up chances and letting teams into games. And that's probably the one question mark that people will have around that Chelsea side, is that when Lukaku in particular is out of the team, do they have the goals to punish teams when they're on top? So to see himself and even Timo Werner, you know, nearing fitness is certainly a welcome sign, because they definitely need that focal point. And I thought when Lukaku was fit at the beginning of the season, he looked like, you know, the missing piece of the jigsaw that they needed. He's a big man, he can run in behind, he can hold up the ball, and he's also a threat from wide areas. So he gives them that extra bit of a dimension, because when you look across the team, the back five seems to be so solid. There's a really good combination then between Kante and Jorginho, or Kante and Kovacic, whichever combination they go with. And it's just that number nine that they need to consistently hit the back of the net in order to make them probably an even greater force than they were last year. And like Mark has just said there, you know, this is a really busy period, so you're going to need to use that full squad, and you're going to need to be able to rotate amongst the team. So going really well at the moment. I think the performance against Juventus earlier on in the campaign was probably one that they'd look back on as being one of their worst so far this season. So I'd fully expect them to be, you know, quick out of traps tonight, and I think they'll be Juve.
Sorry, there's loads more games tonight. Obviously Barcelona against Benfica, Mark. Barca, they haven't been going wonderful, but have they any chance at all?
Yeah, I mean, the absolutely must-win game for Barcelona. They, you know, they got their first win in their first game under Xavi at the weekend, a 1-0 victory, a derby success over Espanyol. It wasn't particularly pretty. You know, anyone that sort of just thought that, you know, Xavi could come in, click his fingers, and Barcelona would suddenly be going back to that sort of peak Pep Guardiola team, sadly mistaken. It was really hard work. Won it eventually to a Memphis Depay penalty. In fact, Raúl de Tomás, the sort of Spanish international striker who plays for Espanyol, hit the woodwork in the second half for Espanyol. So he only fractionally managed to win the game. I think that what Xavi has said is that he wants to play with wingers, and they didn't have any wingers fit in that game, given that Memphis is now seen as a centre forward. And so you maybe won't see the full sort of Xavi experience, if you like, for this new Barcelona team until Dembele and Ansu Fati are both fit and sort of firing. They've had injury disrupted campaigns, the pair of them. Get them two on the wings, get back to a more traditional Barcelona style of play, because when you think of the best Barcelona teams, they completely stretch the play. You know, they're fantastic at sort of really sort of making the full use of the width of the pitch. The Nou Camp feels like the biggest pitch in the world when Barcelona are playing right at it. They're not that Barcelona at the moment, but if you're looking for a game outside of the obvious ones, this probably is the one to focus on. I would go for Barcelona, but it's not with any great deal of confidence, because Benfica tore them apart earlier on in the campaign, but it's a bit different going to the Nou Camp.
Xavi's trying to lay down the law in Barcelona as well, isn't he? He's brought in a whole lot of new rules around meal times, training sessions, etc., etc. He's trying to stamp his authority at the Nou Camp.
Yeah, I mean, this has become a bit of a trend, doesn't it? Steven Gerrard and Antonio Conte have done likewise at Villa and Spurs in recent weeks, sort of, you know, trying to, make the players, I suppose, a bit more professional. Doesn't say much for what was going on previously, that if you have to lay down the law. One of those sort of laying down of the laws includes Gerard Piqué spending less time with his production company. Piqué's a very busy man off the field, got a high-profile relationship with his wife, Shakira. He's also got an interest in the Davis Cup, that the tennis tournament that is taking place, I think it's later on this week, or certainly into next week as well, the Davis Cup. And yeah, he was the man behind that's completely sort of changed the format of the competition. So, he has got interests outside of football. I think Xavi would prefer it if everybody just focused on the football when Pep Guardiola was the coach. And, he will go back, I suppose, a bit like when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was talking about sort of, the way that Sir Alex Ferguson used to run Manchester United. I think that, he will expect Barcelona to be sort of have certain behavioural standards, and that does include discipline off the pitch in terms of training times and eating right and eating together. And there have been accusations that Barcelona's professionalism of some of their players and also the attitude of some of their players just hasn't been right. I think some of them would point to the fact that Ronald Koeman, was a big part of that, and he wasn't a great man manager. Xavi is hoping to get everybody fighting, for the same cause, and just putting down some a few sort of simple laws and rules is one way of doing that.
Are we starting to see a little bit of a trend here with managers telling us what they're doing, a bit like Eddie Howe at Newcastle saying he hasn't seen it because he's there so early in the morning to work and then doesn't leave until it's dark again?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that that's going to help Newcastle in any way if the manager ends up doing 12, 13 hour days and could end up sort of exhausted by the time it comes to doing the matches. I think that the managers are always looking, and as journalists, we're always looking for reasons as to why a new manager will make a difference. And so they nearly always say the same kind of things here on, the players aren't fit enough, they're maybe not professional enough, as a manager, I'm going to work harder. I can't believe, I know Newcastle, there was this accusation, wasn't there, that Steve Bruce allowed the players too much time off. But generally speaking, I think that all of the managers sort of dedicate their life to football. I know for a fact that Ralf Hasenhüttl at Southampton, I was speaking to someone at Southampton, said he sends emails in the middle of the night, or what most people would consider the middle of the night, but for him it's just the morning and he's up and he's ready for it. So I think they all do it, and just as journalists we're probably just looking for reasons of why there's new hope for fans of these teams.
But you're speaking about discipline, Mark. There's obviously been a lot of ill-discipline in League One with fans. Mm-hmm. There was plenty of hassle with the Marseille's trip to Lyon at the weekend. And there's plenty of pressure coming from the French government on League One to sort it out right now, isn't there?
There is, absolutely. I mean, there have been several matches that have now been postponed or delayed due to objects being thrown on the pitch. There's also been fan violence outside and inside the stadium. The latest case here was Dimitri Payet, formerly of West Ham, being hit by a water bottle that was pretty much full and had the lid on as well. So I know some people have accused Payet of making a meal of it, but I can guarantee that will have hurt. From a distance, Lyon have now been told they're not allowed to play with fans at their stadium until mid-December at the earliest. Marseille have been a team that's been heavily involved in this. Several of their games have been halted. I can't quite work out what's going on. I mean, I tend to think that what happens inside a football stadium is just a mirror image, really, of just society. So clearly there are issues in France at the moment. I don't know, we've seen it in other European cities over, lockdown and sort of, that causing sort of potential disruption, and whether that's played any kind of part, I'm not so sure. It's difficult to Nobody's really come up with a reason as to why. I think sometimes you do get copycat. So where we've seen sort of, you know, the Nice fans get involved with the Marseille players, it almost puts it in the mind of another team's fans to, you know, to do something similar. I think that Marseille were absolutely right at the weekend not to return to play. The referee initially tried to make them come back out, but Payet was not in a fit state to play the game. And I think once a player gets hit like that with an object, the opposing team have got absolutely every right to just say, no, well, you know, we're not playing in this environment.
Well, speaking of copycat behaviour, I'm sure there aren't too many clubs that will be hoping for similar to what happened in Roma during the week with Afina Gian and his present from Mourinho.
Yeah, so Gian, young teenage striker, came on at the weekend, scored both of Roma's goals in a 2-0 win over Andrei Shevchenko's Genoa. It was Shevchenko's first game in charge of Genoa. And as a present, Jose Mourinho had promised young Gian that he would buy him a pair of expensive trainers. I can't even pronounce which designer trainers they were. I certainly haven't got any of them, but they were around about...
Well, Marie has, don't worry.
I believe... yeah, I mean they wouldn't be for me. They looked terrible, to be honest. Definitely a waste of money, sort of blue sort of trainers. But Gian wanted them. Mourinho promised he would buy him. It was a really nice sort of moment, really. And Mourinho gets a kick in from everybody, and I've probably done it many times on this slot myself over the years. So just nice of him, really, to pay back the youngster who sort of helped him win the maximum points. There was a bit of a fuss made afterwards over suggestions of a racial comment from somebody in the video about Gian, sort of, oh, there's bananas in the box. But Gian was very quick to say that there was nothing racist about that, and he's known around the club for eating a lot of bananas. He certainly made a big impression on the team initially, you know, making these two goals. I don't think many people outside of sort of Roma knew too much about him, but he certainly looks a big talent, and it won't be long before he's able to buy himself, I wouldn't have thought, that those expensive trainers and shoes.
You laugh about the expensive trainers and shoes, lads, but one of my children wants a Canadian Goose jacket from Santa and a pair of Balenciaga runners, because he's seen all the Premier League footballers wearing them on their YouTube channels, and it is an absolute disaster, Santa.
Oh, Marie, those are the trainers. Those are definitely, you pronounce that one right. I know of the Canadian Goose jackets, but the trainers were a new one on me.
Okay, before we finish up with Mark, it is halftime in those two games that kicked off a little bit earlier. Villarreal 0-0 and Dynamo Kiev are trailing Bayern Munich 2-0 with the goals coming from Lewandowski and Kingsley Coman. Mark, thank you so much as always, and we will chat to you next week. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back with more football.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It has been a day of developments in the League of Ireland, and unfortunately for fans of Waterford FC, it hasn't been very positive. Mark has been relieved of his duties as Waterford manager, and a little bit earlier, Conor Kane from RTE went around Waterford and got some reaction from the fans.
Oh, just absolute shock. Literally never thought this was going to happen. You go to bed last night and then wake up, phone is ringing, and it's like, you won't believe this. The manager's been sacked. No, it's a major shock, especially we've a huge game on Friday and nobody would have seen this coming. Like, we were in turmoil at the start of the season on and off the pitch, and then there was just such a sense of hope, unbelievable, and buy-in from the whole community in Waterford, city and county, and everything seemed to be going the right direction, and now we're thrown into upheaval again.
Well, you know, it's an uphill battle. UCD, you know, are going to prove a very strong side. And of course, with the squad depleted now, the battle has been made just a little bit harder. But I do believe everyone at the club, you know, will pull together now. And, you know, this is the most important game in the last 4 years. So I think it's up to everyone now to pull together and try and get a result. In the past, we've had some bad results under certain management regimes. And of course, in football, management regimes will clash with managers. And that's natural. That's part of the game.
But I suppose that's very unfortunate for us. We've gone through, as you said, I think it's 5 in the last 12 months. And I don't think we'll have a 6th one until the end of the season or until the start of next year. But yeah, it's a bit of a turmoil moment at the moment.
It certainly is turmoil down there at the moment. And if anyone is just tuning in, so the way this played out was at 7:53 a.m. this morning, Burcham posted on Twitter and said that he had been handed a week-long suspension following a text exchange with the club's owner, Richard Forrest, last night. Then 40 minutes later, Waterford issued a very brief statement saying that Waterford FC had terminated the contract of Mark Burcham and that the club would be making no further comment at the time. Then Burcham went on to WL Orr and he said that the first he'd heard that he was being removed from his post was on Twitter. And then this evening, Waterford's owner Richard Forrest released a statement and he said that he felt he'd no choice but to dismiss Burcham after being given an ultimatum. And he said that he's very disappointed that he had to make a very tough decision, especially with the game they have facing them on Friday against UCD. It has been a saga of a day. It is a mess, Paul Corrie, but what effect is it going to have on the team when they do go to play UCD? Because that is what matters most, really.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, Marie, I think it's utterly embarrassing what's going on, not only for Waterford but for the league. You know, they're facing into the most important fixture of the season against UCD in that playoff game. And the beginning of the season, they really struggled under Kevin Sheedy. They were bottom of the table. Mark Burcham came in and seemed to do quite well with the squad of players that he had. He managed to get them above Longford in the table, and only on the last day of the season did they end up in that relegation spot. So you combine that, they got to the FA Cup, or the semi-final of the FAI Cup. He has done a relatively good job with that group of players. You would imagine, irrespective of whatever conversation has gone on, you would just leave him in charge until Saturday and let him play against UCD, because that is the man who the players are familiar playing with. They understand what it is he expects of them, and he will know the players better than anybody else. So I just find it ridiculous that he's been sacked, given the game that they have coming up on the weekend. It puts them in a really difficult position, because UCD are absolutely flying at the moment. They beat Treaty, then they've beaten Bray, so they're coming into it in a vein of confidence, particularly with Colin Whelan up front, who seems to be the standout player in the first division. So I wouldn't be at all surprised, Marie, if this was to carry on into Saturday and UCD were to beat them, because that sort of distraction and that sort of confusion off the pitch tends to actually portray itself on the pitch as well, and they haven't been in great form over the last number of weeks, so it puts them in a very precarious position.
Paul, every Manchester United player will have seen Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's departure coming. The Waterford players won't have seen this. What kind of an effect could it have on them?
I mean, they definitely didn't, because I don't think Mark Burcham did either. Given the fact that it was a conversation that he describes over text, would suggest that this wasn't something that was on the cards to maybe review his position or see where they were at. I think the players will be affected, because I think in any interviews that I saw Mark Burcham give, particularly after the Bowes game in the FAI Cup semi-final, he stood by his players. He's a very honest type of character with regards to the performances of the players or decisions that he saw happening on any given match day. And I think players by nature will actually buy into that, and I think they've bought into what he has tried to do with them since he's taken over. And I mean, the club, from John Sheridan to Kevin Sheedy and now to this situation with Waterford,
fifth manager in 12 months,
and it's the nature of the managers and the comments that have come out, the nature of how they've been brought into the club and then how they've left. It wouldn't give you a lot of confidence that there's stability down there. And I think if you're to bring that then into Saturday, I think that could definitely affect the players, because they're playing a team, like I mentioned, UCD, who were full of confidence. They met each other in the FAI Cup. UCD were beaten 3-2, and Waterford were probably on a good run of form at that moment in time. It's not that case now. I think they really needed Mark Burcham for this game, and I think that could be detrimental come Saturday.
Yeah, it is, as you said, it's embarrassing, and it doesn't help the league either, because we're talking so often with Ruby especially about trying to change the perception of the league, and things like this do it no favours.
Yeah, the league is only as good as the people that are around it, and when you've got, like, Waterford's a massive catchment area for fans, and to have a club down around the southeast is important because you need that spread around the country. So when you have this sort of behaviour going on and the lack of professionalism around the club, it does raise question marks about, you know, how far we can take the league or to what level you could take it. But I find it ironic, Marie. I was reading the statement from Richard Forrest and it said, you know, the club would like to thank Mark for the great job he has done for us and wish him all the best for the future. I mean, if he's done a great job for you, surely you just leave him, irrespective of the difference, you just leave him in the job until Saturday. So that would make you, would, you know, question how well that club is being run, and that then lends itself to the bigger picture of the league.
Okay, never a dull moment, that is for sure. Okay, we are finished for this evening. Ruby, thank you for joining us. Paul, thank you for coming into the studio. We'll be back tomorrow and we will definitely be doing our build-up to the FAI Cup final. We'll be starting with David Snaid. Plus, we'll be live to the Etihad where Pochettino's PSG take on Manchester City. Tara Kumar is up next.
With Green Fern, have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.